Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister who used to work for the Federal Reserve in New York, it's good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. It's a country where if you work hard, most of your wealth is confiscated by force through taxation. And if you don't work at all, you get a small handout that is taken by force from those who work hard through taxation. And if you protest about it, you get told to go get a job. My very special guest is Andras Jones. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me here in your New Zealand coffee house.
Mm-mm. Now, do you know how coffee houses originally came about? Apparently, they started in France, and they were famed for having political discussions and higher brow conversations and things of that nature. So, you know, I think talking about this show as a bit of a coffee house, I think is rather fitting.
Yeah. I've even got my my caffeinated beverage right here. So,
yeah, myself too.
I'm all ready.
All right.
Well, it's great to be here.
We're caffeinated. We're fluoridated. Now, can you tell me just a little bit about who you are, what you do? And, of course, before you do any of that, just make sure you put out your website for everybody so who wants to go and see a bit more of it from you.
Well, you can find me in a lot of different places, and I'll send you some links that you can post at the end of the show. But the best place to go is radio8ball.com. That's the home of the show that I created called Radio 8 Ball. But I should back up and say that I'm mostly here as a representative of Sync Book Press, who put out my book, Accidental Initiations in the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia. And that book is sort of about my experience in the sort of in and with the magical architecture of Olympia. Olympia was built by Freemasons, and they did their tricks and, you know, alignments in the building of the city. And there's a very interesting walking labyrinth that I document in the book, Accidental Initiations. It also talks about some of the small town politics and sort of interesting things that have happened in my life and around it. And so it was great to work with Sync Book Press on that. I guess the reason that I synced up with the Sync Book guys was because I do the show Radio 8 Ball, which is all based on synchronicity. The show started as a radio show, then became a live theater show. Now I'm doing it as a segment on the Synchronized podcast for Sync Book Press, and also doing it as live events around the country, and always with an eye towards doing it in some way, in a larger way, as a TV show or maybe a syndicated radio show. But the format is very simple. People ask questions, and then you pick a song at random, and then you interpret the randomly chosen song as the answer, like picking a musical tarot card. So it's a game that, to some degree, people play all the time, just like with the shuffle function on their MP3 player or whatever. But we've been doing this since 1998. It started on KAOS in Olympia, Washington at the Evergreen State College. And I came into that because I'd spent years playing music, touring around, putting out records, and connecting with a lot of great musicians, and finding synchronicity in music was sort of at the center of all of those pursuits. And that naturally led to Radio 8 Ball. And I guess to tap this biographical portion off, for some people, the most interesting thing about me is that when I was a teenager, I was in some movies, played leads in some motion pictures. If you care about it, then it's cool that I was in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master. I played one of the leads in that, and a bunch of other films with a bunch of other sort of famous people now. But they're all mostly B films, and I haven't been doing that for a while. Although occasionally I get called to act and stuff, and that's fun. It's fun to get to be paid to play kids' games. But I guess the thing I'm kind of most interested in talking about with you here is about the synchronicity that is going on here in Olympia and how it ties in with what I'll call the Evergreen Conspiracy. I know that I've been on a lot of different shows that Alan from SyncBook Press has hooked me up with, and I know that there's this interesting crossover between the sync community, the people who focus on synchronicity, and the conspiracy community, the community that focuses on the conspiracies. I think they're sort of both true. It's just like there's music going on and there's synchronicity going on. There's conspiracies going on and there's synchronicity going on. Synchronicity is always going on, and people are always, you know, making music or to some degree conspiring to build their power in one way or another, or to thwart the power that's being held over them. But I wanted to focus on the thing about where it really sinks is where it comes close to home. You know, the conspiracy that is at the heart of your town or your country is going to be of more interest to you than the one that is that affects my town or my community. I mean, I hope we're all interested and our hearts are open to, and at least our curiosity is piqued by the conspiracies that go on in each other's lives. And maybe that's what we can do around in this coffee house is like, I'll invite you into my little small town conspiracies here, and we can unpack that if that sounds fun.
Yeah, it always sounds fun.
So are you familiar with the city of Olympia, Washington at all, or the Evergreen State College?
No, not at all.
Okay. That's perfect. So it's like I'm telling you a myth. So the city of Olympia is the capital of the state of Washington. And Washington was the last state in the Union, in the United States, besides Hawaii and Alaska. It was named after Washington, George Washington. So it's sort of the end. And Olympia itself is marked as the end of the Oregon Trail, which is sort of the end of the bloody conquest of the Americas by the Europeans. And, of course, Olympia has these sort of godly pretensions and connotations that are brought up by the name, Olympia, Land of the Gods. Sort of a pure, very sort of pure living kind of small town, very green, very progressive. I came to Olympia in the early 70s as an infant with my family. My father was one of the founding faculty at the Evergreen State College, which is a progressive liberal arts college in Olympia that was founded in the late 60s and began in the early 70s. And that's where the sort of interesting sort of global conspiracy, Evergreen conspiracy that I wanted to share here comes into play. I only have anecdotal evidence to support this, so take that for what you will. But the story goes that Evergreen State College received its funding and was founded with the intention of siphoning the radical professors out of the UC school, the University of California schools, the Ivy League schools, and the big Southern universities in the United States during the 60s, during the campus unrest. And that it was actually Ronald Reagan who was the governor of California and was sort of under pressure to quell those uprisings, that he was instrumental in arranging the funding for the Evergreen State College so that it could go around and recruit professors like my father, who was at the University of California in Santa Cruz, who were the radical professors. They offered them great paychecks and a lot of freedom. The first five to 10 years of the Evergreen State College, it was a very, very experimental college, a lot of freedom to educate the way you were inspired, which was very in keeping with the time. And so of course, it was like honey to all these radical professors, and where the radical professors went, the radical students went. And then if you believe the conspiracy, then it was effective in drawing a lot of those students up to Olympia, Washington, where it's beautiful and not much happens. It's still the capital of the state. But if you look at the Evergreen State College and the way it's laid out, even though its ideals are very hippie and crunchy granola at its core, or were designed to be, it's laid out like an easily locked down sort of prison-y kind of vibe, very concrete, one clock tower at the center of it that you could pretty much lock with it, with that and the underground tunnels that are built into it and the very slippery red square that's at the center of it with a hose, a sniper, and, you know, some trucks to go underneath. You could probably lock the place down pretty quickly if you needed to, if there was an uprising, at least. And not that that's ever been put into play, but if you were building a college to fulfill this function, it was built architecturally to withstand the uprising of these potential college radicals that you're attracting to come up here.
So they made a little prison university just in case a whole bunch of peace-loving hippies decided to have some kind of an uprising. What are they going to do, chuck flowers at you and you throw bullets back at them?
Well, but this is the time of Kent State, and this is the time, this was in the mid to late 60s when they were actually shutting down schools, and there was much more of a militant student protest movement. So it was reasonable to believe from their standpoint. I think in 1966, 67, 68, when this would have been going through, they weren't thinking, oh, well, in 1970, James Taylor is going to put out Sweet Baby James and everyone's going to go back to the woods. They were, you know, they really believed on both sides that there was some kind of revolution that was coming. And, you know, we could unpack that, but I want to, you know, I guess I'm curious, you know, you're probably you hear a lot of different stories and theories. How does that resonate with you? Not knowing Olympia or Washington, but some familiarity with Ronald Reagan, I imagine.
Well, you know, a minor bit of familiarity. I mean, I'd need more information before I can make much of a judgment call of it. I mean, I can only really relay it to my own university experience, where everybody who I made as a friend was basically a vacuous intellectual who really had no substance to their character. And all of the lessons that we were taught, whether that be from world history to sociology to film and media or whatever, was also just as vacuous and useless.
Well, perhaps, and this, I guess, is the idea. I mean, I think that's the feeling that a lot of the original Evergreen professors had about the schools that they were leaving, was exactly that. So, I mean, for myself, I was a child at the time, but growing up around that environment, you definitely had the sense that you were in a place where the radicals and the crazies had a bit more of had the keys to the kingdom and for a while. And Evergreen did have this sense of maybe genuine exploration. Although even then, you know, if you read Jose Arguez's biography, he was one of the original founding faculty as well. The guy who was sort of instrumental in founding Earth Day and sort of propagating the 2012 myth to some degree and hipping people to Mayan art. And that's how he came into it, was through, as he was an art teacher at Evergreen. But even he, I mean, I guess even he was running into sort of the small minds of academia, even back in 1971, amongst the most, you know, some of the most radical professors in the country. So maybe that is the nature of these institutions, that they're, you know,
I believe that's the nature of all things that are quote unquote institutions, isn't it? To institutionalize people, to stop them from actually really being radical.
I don't know. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is an institution. I don't feel hamstrung in any way. I feel invited into your cafe.
I'm not sure if the Vinnie Eastwood Show is an institution, but if you found listening to it, you might get institutionalized.
The interesting synchronicity here is that today there is a strike going on at the Evergreen State College. They're striking because the college is, they've been hiring temp workers and then firing them after 6 months and then rehiring them so that they don't have to give them benefits. So someone who can work there for 10 years, but on a six-monthly basis,
and it's like, every year that you work there, you get a pay rise and you get such and such into your 401k.
Right.
I've been working here 10 years. Yeah, but it's only been at 6 months intervals. You get nothing.
Right. So it's interesting because I sort of set this up with the sort of the grand sort of global conspiracy at the foundation of Evergreen, if you will. And then there's this obvious one that we're talking about right now. That's not, I mean, I guess that's a conspiracy of a kind, but it's so obvious that I only had to lay it out to you in the very broadest strokes and you were able to fill it in. So it's like a conspiracy that's going on everywhere. And it's sort of like the conspiracy of the way business is done, and yet we're surprised.
It's called standard operating procedure.
Exactly.
Can we screw somebody over who works for us? Yes, we can. Well, why not? All right, well, exactly. We're coming to break now. Andras Jones from Radio8Ball.com is my guest, and we'll be right back at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You can listen live if you go to the homepage. That's AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There's a little play button there and a listen live page. You can download little thingies that you can play in your iTunes or your MP3 players, etc., or whatever the frack. There's also copious quantities of archives on that website too, which you can download for free. And I've got a couple of listeners in Australia who are truck drivers who have to drive the long hauls across the desert, and they'll download like a couple of weeks worth of the Vinnie Eastwood Show and then listen to them while they're driving. Hey, you got to make it lemonade out of lemons, I guess. My very special guest is Andras Jones, otherwise known as AJ. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Where were we before we got cut off of the break there?
Oh, well, we were going down the rabbit hole of Olympia, Washington, the setting for my book, Accidental Initiations in the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia, the home of Radio 8 Ball, which actually comes out of my father's work. He was a professor at the Evergreen State College, a dream psychologist there. He used dreams in terms of as an educational tool and dream seminars as part of interdisciplinary study with different professors. And we were about to get into the Evergreen conspiracy at the heart of my book, Accidental Initiations, which is, I guess, sadly become sort of a central story in the story of Radio 8 Ball as it currently is situated. And for people who are just tuning in, Radio 8 Ball is the show where we answer questions by picking songs at random and interpreting those randomly chosen songs as the answers to the questions. It's a pop oracle. That's what I call it. And right now we're running an Indiegogo campaign to try and fix the website. The website's down. Just trying to raise $3,000, not trying to do anything $2,000, but hoping that the people who support Synchronicity and the work we do with it, with Radio 8 Ball and have been doing since 1998, well, you know, check it out. It's like, actually, whether or not you support it, it's a good little retrospective of what the history of the show has been with some of our celebrity guests and musicians who have been on the show and just a lot of history about it. We've been doing it for a long time and a lot of great people have contributed to it. But where we left off,
Maybe you should chuck out some of those famous names, bro.
Some of the guests we've had, like John C. Reilly, Seth Green, Patricia Arquette, Weird Al Yankovic, Radon Chong, Nina Hartley, authors and thinkers like Daniel Pinchbeck or Ralph Metzner, and then musicians like Ricky Lee Jones and John Wesley Harding and Dan Byrne and Anya Marina and Steve Poltz and a lot of people there are some people who are national and no national artists, but a lot of sort of popular regional artists from the West Coast and the Northeast and different places where we've done the show. And we were doing it. Like I said, the show started at Chaos at the college, KAOS, which is the college station at Evergreen, a community station. And we were doing the show from 1998 to 2008 there. And this is where I get into my own little, my own little conspiracy that I was the subject of. I was hosting the show and my co-host, got kind of weirdly fixated on me. The woman, she got fixated on me and she got really inappropriate and just like was sending me crazy emails late at night and got really uncomfortable on the air. And I eventually had to ask her to stop doing the show. And when I did, she went nuts and was tearing down my, like, not to my face, but sort of all around me. Like my posters were getting torn down and I was getting weird threatening emails from anonymous accounts. And I didn't know if it was coming from a lot of people, one person or whatever. But then when I figured out that it was probably orchestrated from her because she had this gigantic blog all about me, particularly, like just very obsessive. And this is one of those weird things about, I don't know if this is exactly what was going on, but there is something about being like a very semi-famous actor. Like you're sort of famous enough for people to project a lot of big stuff on, but not rich or famous enough to actually have any kind of protection from that. So this person, I've run into this a few times in my life, and I don't think of that as being who I am even, but film is powerful. And if you watch someone, you project stuff onto that. That's whatever it is. I don't even actually.
It creates a artificial familiarity, and then what happens is these people think that they know you. The reality is 99% of them have never met you, never even had so much as a conversation with you. And I think that a relationship exists when none does.
Right. And then when you try and make friends with someone like that and sort of support them and be nice to them, what ends up happening more often is that they get creepily attached and you know, get disappointed. And when they get disappointed, they lash out at you with all their mommy or daddy issues or whatever they have from the past. And so this person was doing this, and I went to the station management. I'd been there for 10 years as a volunteer, and I asked them to do something about it, like you would in a, you know, and this is especially, like I said, this is Olympia, Washington, a very crunchy granola feminist kind of town where, you know, we know how harassment works and we know what you're supposed to do and that no means no. It's not like we live in a redneck town where, you know, it's just anything goes down. We live in a little bit of a, you know, it's supposed to be a very conscious community. So I went to my managers and asked them to do something about it. And instead of doing something about it, they told me I was paranoid. They told me I should just deal with it. But it was also clear that whatever this woman had been stirring up, they had gotten caught up in it too. And then eventually one of them sort of lashed out at me verbally right before I went on onto the show, and I made an official complaint about it. And again, what was done was that my show was taken off the air, Radio 8 Ball, which was a very popular show. And considering that my father was one of the founding faculty at the campus, I'd been at the campus at that point for almost 40 years, for the whole 40 years of the school, either as a kid growing up there, going to school there, doing my show there. And overnight, they took the show off the air, and the station man, the reason they gave was because the show was now too popular. It was now popular in Seattle, and so it wasn't non-commercial, which was a very weird reasoning for taking the show off. But then more than that, they went and the station manager lied to the campus police and told them that I assaulted them, and now I'm banned from that campus. Again, the campus where I grew up, where, you know, so, and it was, you know, it's brutal and all these, you know, it was brutal for me emotionally and it was hard and, you know, it's been really hard. But having gotten some distance from it, I've begun to start to look at it, I don't know, with a little bit more of an, you know, as a detective or as an academic or as just someone, as a student of life. Because I've exhausted almost everything. Like, the college isn't going to do anything about it. Even though, this is what's interesting, is that the woman who harassed me eventually wrote me a letter. She developed cancer and was facing her demons, and she realized she had done something wrong. And she sent me this long letter telling me all the stuff she had done, which amounted to a pretty intense stalking and harassment campaign over several months, which led up to the radio show being taken off the air, which seems like good enough evidence to maybe open this case up. But the college, you know, closed ranks around their employee, the station manager who made the call to call campus police and do all that and sort of like throw up this, I don't know, this wall of lies to keep me out of the, you know, out of the debate. And there really is no recourse. And yet at the same time, right now, a similar kind of lack of integrity is being challenged with these strikers. And when a synchronicity like that comes up, I take notice, especially because even before I knew there was a strike and I knew that I was going to come on the show, I always try and think about what is the point. You know, there's so many things we could talk about. But what I really wanted to talk about with you and with your listeners was the small conspiracies that are connected to the big conspiracies, because you can look at this as a very small town thing. And it is. It's a bunch of small town egos, mine included.
I refer to these kind of things as sort of like microcosms. You know, if one phenomenon happens in one place, you can be guaranteed that it's not the only time it's ever happened. And in fact, if it's involving some form of scumbaggery, then you can be assured that it's happening in very, very many places quite regularly.
You call it scumbaggery. I call it boring haterism, but it's the same thing. Yes. Yes. It's the people who ruin it for everyone. But it makes me think of the law, you know, because there we do know that there, you know, that there is and has been at least a grand sort of government conspiracy to infiltrate media organizations and sort of move out the independent voices. And I'm not saying that really touched on my situation, but it's my show was about as interactive and as free form. Radio 8 Ball, anyone could call in. Like, it's not just a broadcasting show. It was a very interactive show for all ages. And closing that open microphone had an effect which was in alignment with a much larger, you know, grander conspiracy to close up these mediums. And again, not saying that they're connected other than that they both, that they fulfilled similar purpose. Like, the one we know happened, like the COINTELPRO stuff. And then there's also one we know happened, which, because I know it happened because it happened to me. Not that they are connected, except that they fulfill the same purpose.
Yeah. And if you had a really popular show and it was suddenly taken off air, was it just taken off air in that one particular station, or was it taken off air full stop?
Well, they didn't have that. It was just on that station. So it was just taken off there on that station. But it was, you know, that's where the next level, you know, this is again a small town where it was taken off the station and then lies were told about me in this small town. It doesn't take long for that, for those to get around. And it's sort of made it so that I now have to work in a town, in a city 60 miles away generally, while I continue to live here in Olympia, just because it had a damning effect on on my name, which is, to me, again, something that, while being personally traumatic, as someone who's poetically minded, is, like, I don't think of myself, I live in a small town and I love being from this small town, but I don't think of myself as a small town person or the things I'm doing as small town stuff. So it kind of makes sense that I would run afoul of some of small town scumbaggery, if you will. Even in a town as cool and progressive and, you know, awesome as Olympia, it's still really small. And something about, I don't know, something about small towns. Well, see, I'm going to make a generalization that flies in the face of what you were just saying, that this exists everywhere. You know, I guess Washington, D.C. is a small town, too, by those, you know, by those standards. But what's, I guess what I wanted to, where I wanted to bring this around back to was that when we engage synchronicity, it's always a reflection. And from everything, I've only listened to your show a couple times, but from everything I get from your show, you're a very justice-minded person. You hold a justice, an intense justice energy. And that's very much what this part of my story is about. That's the book, Accidental Initiation, sort of breaks down my story into the different sephirot that are in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, that are represented in this architectural structure that's built into the city of Olympia. And the chapter that's about justice is all about this, my experience with Evergreen and with this woman and with the sort of boring haterism of the city of Olympia. But I'm, you know, and at the same, and my sort of enlightened friends, and maybe you encounter this too, will tell me, you know, why are you so connected to the injustice? Like, the more you're connected or attached to the injustice, the more you're just going to keep attracting more injustice into your life. And I know that's true because, you know, I do Radio 8-Ball. I know that you see what you're looking for. You know, people who have, were very, who have lots of romantic issues are going to keep having lots of romantic issues.
My perspective on this is a little bit skewed, if it will. Like, we talk about lots of scumbaggery on this show, and the guests are the ones who are the victims of it, and they're coming on and talking about it. But in general, they're all very cool people. So I never actually experience any of the scumbaggery. All I experience is really cool people.
Well, I have. That's very lucky. You're a very lucky man. But I mean, I don't want to discourage that point of view, because I think it's great to be appreciative of the awesomeness in your life. But I would imagine doing a show like this, where you're putting out difficult truths, when you try and take it out of your cafe and try and bring your cafe to the world, do you encounter, like, what are the just injustice type difficulties that you encounter, or do you encounter them, or do you even experience them as such?
Well, I guess you can't escape from them. They're everywhere. And mostly I just try to avoid them or block them, you know. So if I get somebody on Facebook or on email, you know, typing in all caps, calling me ad hominem names and so on and so forth, block, and I never hear from the motherfucker again. And thus I go back to being at peace with the Vinnie Eastwoodness. Right, and we're coming to break. And we'll be right back after that one with Andras Jones, ladies and gentlemen, radio8ball.com, which is incidentally down. So if you're capable of somehow supporting
No, is that not down? It'll take you to the Indiegogo campaign.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
I've traveled, welcome back.
I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that goes everywhere, man. I had somebody on a Facebook post, I think it was Chris Huddyfield, the other day, tell me, Vinny doesn't cover ETs on this show. And just like, go to my YouTube channel, search ET or Alien or something like that. It comes up with a whole bunch of videos, so just paste one in. Yeah, don't talk about that, do I? Like, seriously, if there is a topic that I haven't covered, I haven't heard about it yet. We cover so much stuff. There is a gargantuan cockroach crawling along my roof right now. That is the scariest looking thing I've ever seen in my life. He's got feelers like scimitars, like an Iraq or something. That is freaky. Anyway, I'll kill him during the break. My very special guest is Andres Jones. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Calm down. Size of him.
Or is the cockroach?
Hey, the cockroach has been everywhere, man. So anyway, what were we talking about before we come off to break? We were talking about
Skullhackery. We were firmly down the rabbit hole, friend.
I don't know. Well, everybody uses this analogy of the rabbit hole and how deep does it go. And you know what? I'm of the theory that there are many, many rabbit holes, and they have infinite depth, and that you can get lost down them. And the key is not to actually figure out how deep each and every single rabbit hole goes, but find out where the walls are. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a limit to what each and every conspiracy and study into scumbaggery can really accomplish for you. So once you start to learn about, say, secretive roundtable groups like Trilateral Commission or the Council of 300 or the Council on Foreign Relations or so on and so forth, X amount of numbers of groups, you then start to think to yourself, well, okay, well, what are the limits to that? And at what point do I stop obsessing over this one particular phenomenon and then start to collate it and corroborate this evidence with many, many other things that are seemingly unrelated? How do they all interconnect? How do they interweave? And I see what happens here with a lot of people is that they become obsessed upon particular strains, and for that, that becomes their speciality. And a study came out not too long ago, I think it might have been up on Natural News, that says that if you are specialized in something, you generally have lower intelligence than people who aren't specialized in one particular area, but have a little bit of experience in many, many, many different areas. It allows the brain to work harder or something like that. So you'll see people with white lab coats who are incredible particle physicists, dudes, at the cafeteria chowing down the least healthy food you could ever see because they know nothing about nutrition, so on and so forth. And what I find about this show is really good. And by the way, listeners, it's supported by you exclusively, pretty much. If you donate $5 a month, that goes to pay my internet bill, which just came in at like $120 because I'm uploading a couple of gigabytes a day. But the whole point of the show is like, really, we don't set the bar too high. You know, it doesn't matter if I've never heard of you or the listeners have never heard of you. We get you on to tell you the story. And sure enough,
you know, as a guest, I love to hear that. It's like, yeah, it's just, we don't set the bar too high. We'll just have anybody on.
Yeah. I mean, it's equal opportunity.
Tell it to your dates too. That's bad.
Yeah.
Man. I don't have high standards. You're just my type, dear.
Yeah. Well, see, it's not necessarily about what would you say? It's not about being elitist. What I find is that everybody's got a talent, everybody's got a story, and everybody's somewhat awesome in their own way. And I just bring them on here, try to make them feel comfortable, and bring out that awesomeness.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's very similar to the attitude I had about Radio 8 Ball. Although I always just said that I try to do an aestheticless show. That if you wanted to be on the show and you were good enough to like make a record or do something, you know, to be able to like get to the point where you can be considered for booking and we can have you on, then especially when it was a radio show, you know, absolutely, you know, because, and it was one of the fun things about that was that, well, the thing about playing music at random is that it really does open you. You end up listening to it in a different way when you're listening to try and find an answer in a randomly chosen song. And sometimes when it's a song, you know, you already have such strong associations with it that can be powerful, but it doesn't make you appreciate the song in a new way. Whereas sometimes I'd have artists on who I didn't think I'd like, but then when their song came up as the answer to a question, the synchronicity of it made it such the perfect song for that moment that then later on I realized, oh, well, now I love that song. And I think that's kind of how we get bad music into our hearts and souls when we're kids. It's like we're having these magic moments. And if you're having a magic, sinky moment and the worst song in the world is playing, but you're having that totally alive and inspired moment, that song is going to become very special to you. That's why I like songs, like sappy songs that we listen to when we're falling in love end up being, you know, guilty pleasures that we wouldn't admit to anyone that we like, but when it comes on the radio, where you're singing along with the tears going down our face, right?
Oh, yeah, that's happened to me a couple of times. Maybe even more than a couple of times.
Tell us more.
I can't recall offhand exactly specifically what song it was or at what time in my life it was. I don't.
That's the kind of the power of that music. It is like a dream. Synchronicity and those connections are like a dream in that they're really potent when they're going on. And they kind of exist in a different part of our consciousness so that when we're not there, it's hard. When we're in the consciousness here of relating and presenting, it's hard to get present to that moment when, you know, Ben by Michael Jackson just had us in tears. I don't know why Ben. I think I'm sure I must have cried to Ben at least once in my life. Just saying. You know the song?
It's his love
song to his rat, his dying rat.
Really?
The two of us must speak no more. We both found what we were looking for.
Oh, Ben. Yeah.
Da, 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 da. Oh, Ben, he's singing to a rat, and he's so cute. Oh, that was that'll break your heart. That does break your heart. Michael Jackson breaks your heart in so many different ways.
It makes you go, oh, my heart got broken.
Give me a glove.
Apparently, allegedly, the reason for that glove is he had some kind of a skin disease, you know, and it turns your skin white, like it flakes off, and just this kind of white pastiness comes up. And he realized earlier on in his music career that it was starting to happen to his hand first, so he started wearing a glove.
Oh, necessity is the mother of invention.
Mm. And, you know, everybody thought it was a fashion statement. It's like, no, he's just concealing his white hand. With a white glove, incidentally.
So what's your, I mean, I come here to you through the auspices of the Sync Book Press, and you've had Alan Abadesa-Green on your show, who's the publisher of Sync Book Press. Who else have you had from Sync Book?
Oh, quite a lot, actually. We have this... lovely French assistant producer who does weeks of people from the Sync Book. I think the last week that he did was in April, around about the 9th. So we had Dr. Mangia, Samantha Lawton, Lana Lochteff and Sonic, Randall Carlson, Jason Verbelli, Alex Robinson and Alan Abadesa-Green, and I think he also did one before that as well at some other point. I don't recall. I just interview so many people. It's just like interview right. them, boom, it's wrapped, and then go on to the next person. I forget, that's why it's recorded.
We had Alex Robinson on Synchronize, the show that I produce with Alan Abadesa-Green for Sync Book Radio, and she's great. So I guess I must be a part of one of these Sync Book weeks
That's
that
right.
Guillaume is programming. So how am I holding up as far as the Sync Book authors go?
No, it's just doing fine, I guess.
Fine?
Yeah, could be worse.
I'm not going to fish. That's it. I'm done fishing for compliments from you. Okay. Well, I'd love to, talk with you more about any topic you have, but my interests here are synchronicity, Radio 8 Ball, Justice at Evergreen. Oh, I do want people to support Radio 8 Ball and support our Indiegogo campaign. There's nothing you can do really about the crud that went on with me at the Evergreen State College or at Chaos, in terms of like making a protest towards them. But the best thing you can do to bug them is to support Radio 8 Ball. Because the more successful we are, the less they can ignore our entreaties for justice at the Evergreen State College and at Chaos. So, I know I'm hoping that people from Olympia tune into this because I have to go all the way to New Zealand to have my voice heard on this issue here in Olympia, Washington.
See, and I'm in New Zealand, and I had to go all the way to American Freedom Radio in order to get my voice heard. So, we're on the same boat, just going in different directions of the Nile River Delta, full of all these scumbaggery crocodilian creatures that try to snap us up and give us these wonderful crocodile smiles when we accuse them of fracking us over. My very special guest is Andres Jones from Radio8Ball.com, and we will be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Okay.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this fabulously little fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. I was just thinking about how the work and taxation relationship works in this country. So it's like, there's three types of people. Those who work hard and don't have any money to show for it, they get any extra money taxed off them. Those who never work at all because they were born rich and get all the tax exemptions, get bailed out by money that's stolen off the people who work hard and get all their money taken off them by taxation. And the people who are poor, who don't work at all, also get a little bit of a handout from the people who work really hard and don't have any money. I love economics. You've got to love that Shiite Muslim. All right. Andres Jones is my very special guest. And we're talking about synchronicity. He's from the Sync Book Press. And what I found very complimentary, I think, is that, well, actually, I was going to say something good, but here's something that's bad. I don't have the ability. I need a soundboard, right? Something that I can, bring a feed up, bring a feed down, plug in songs, play them on the radio and things like that. Because it would be cool to be able to do that. What you were planning to do here was like maybe even have some callers in, have them ask a question, and then randomly pick out a song.
Yeah, bring the Radio 8 Ball in as a little segment. Yeah,
I mean, that would be really cool if I had the technology. And that's the real problem as well. But I can tell everybody here that every single thing that I've got in terms of tech for the show has been bought for me by the listenership. So this show in its format in every single way and every single day is supported and made possible by you, the listener. So if you're capable of giving some of your hard-earned cash to make sure that this show not only keeps going, but keeps growing, because it's all very well to keep plodding along and plateauing, but the ultimate goal here is growth, because The listeners to the show in general are a lot like me. They've got good senses of humour, they're fairly intelligent, and they're really kind-hearted, decent, caring people who are very generous, either with their time or whatever they happen to have spare. So go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe for a couple of dollars a month. It can be between $1 and $100 a month, doesn't matter. We'll give you commercial-free archives of this show, which save you about a half an hour of listening time per episode. And I think that's worth something. I do put a lot of extra effort in order to make those extra archives available. And if you want those ad-free archives without paying for them, you can. All right, the links are there. It's not that difficult to find them if you're a bit of a smart cookie. Right, now back to my very special guest, Andreas Jones. Now, I was just wondering.
Oh, I got to correct you though. It's actually just for your benefit. It's actually Andreas.
Andreas Jones.
I was told that "ah" is one of the more relaxing vowel tones. So with my name, you get to relax twice. So when people are just saying Andreas Jones, I feel like they miss the opportunity to say Andreas Jones and relax. Andreas. You can almost fall asleep. By the time you get to the end of Jones, you're just like cutting my hands.
Yeah. Just like turn into a yawn and add Jones on the Jones.
Yeah, Andreas Jones. Yes,
yeah,
that's me.
Yeah.
That's me. Phonetics with Andreas. I wanted to talk about what I was showing in the break. I think I don't know if people were able to watch it, but one of the projects that I've been doing that I got inspired to do once I hooked up with the folks at Sync Book Press, one of the obsessions of Sync synchronicity sleuths is what they call sync ups. And the most famous of these is The Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon. Every stoner, you know, knows the story, whether they've done it or not, that if you play Dark Side of the Moon with The Wizard of Oz, there's all these crazy synchronicities that happen. But then artists like David Plate started doing that with other albums and other films. It sort of works because of the way synchronicity works. It always works. Whenever you put any images with any music, there'll be some things that are like, whoa, that's cool. But then there are some sync ups that are so phenomenally cool on every level that it just blows your mind and you're sitting there with chills the whole time and you think differently about the record after and you think differently about the movie. One that David Plate came up with, which even as I'm thinking of saying it, I'm getting chills, is Rosemary's White Album, which is you take Rosemary's Baby and the White Album, and you play the White Album over Rosemary's Baby. The sync ups are more terrifying than either that record or that movie could be. For instance, the opening shot of the film comes in on the Dakota and settles on the spot where John Lennon died. And then it goes into playing the song Dear Prudence, which was written by John Lennon to Mia Farrow's sister when they were visiting the Maharishi after the filming of Rosemary's Baby, because Rosemary's Baby came out and then the Beatles came out with the White Album like 6 months later. And then 6 months after that, that album supposedly inspired Charles Manson to kill Roman Polanski's pregnant wife, Sharon Tate. And then to add even more, you know, sort of bloody mother issues, Yoko Ono suffers a miscarriage the day before the White Album comes out. And all of this is percolating around this movie about motherhood, the paranoia of motherhood that takes place in the Dakota where John and Yoko lived and where John eventually died. So when you play this music over this with that overlay of all that history, it's like the scariest time machine ever, you know, and it makes that album just explode in a new way, very present for anyone who's watching it. So that's like an example of one of the, what I think is a great one. And what the other thing that's great about this is that anyone can do it. Anyone can grab an AVI of a film, take the sound out, use Windows Movie Maker, put an album under it and play with it. I started playing with this because I was working as a bartender in a bar where we had a screen and I wanted to show some of these. The nights we showed Rosemary's White Album were some pretty weird nights in that bar. And the one, what I was just showing, the video I was showing was The Matrix, and my contribution to this, I don't know, this field of art is this, The Lifehouse Matrix, which is the movie The Matrix with the album The Lifehouse, The Who's Lifehouse, which was people who are fans of The Who, their sort of biggest record, Who's Next, was originally going to be a Tommy-style rock opera, but it eventually got pruned, and then songs from it ended up on later records, and Townsend, you know, played around with it for years. But what's interesting about it is that the story was the story of sort of a dystopian future where environmental degradation had got so bad that everyone was plugged into experience suits, and that was how they experienced the world. And then there was this rock band that had this concert that plugged everyone into it, and they hit this universal note, and then everyone was set free, sort of the utopian ideals of the 60s, but not far off from the story of The Matrix, in the sense of it's, you know, it's sort of like a Christ allegory over this, the dystopian future that we are living into. And when you run the music together with the film, it's incredible. And I've managed to put this up on YouTube without it getting the kibosh, and people can go look at it. If they go look up Lifehouse Matrix, I'll send you a link. You can put it in the podcast links as well. But if you look up Lifehouse Matrix, and if you find my YouTube channel, there's a playlist there, and you can watch it all contiguous, or you can create it yourself. But the reason I was able to do it, because I've been a huge Who fan since I was a teenager, and I've been collecting a lot of the bootlegs that had this stuff. Then I went to Wikipedia and I found what was the official list, and I created that official list, and then I let it play with Lifehouse. And it is freaky, I mean, in terms of how they connect. And so part of the game of this sync-ups is finding those films that really connect. Like, I had this idea to do Thelma and Louise with Fleetwood Mac. Didn't really work. I mean, it worked in some ways, and it did, like, it could work, but it didn't. It wasn't like Rosemary's White Album. It wasn't like Lifehouse Matrix. And I've stumbled on a few others. I don't want to like go into them all now. But have you ever played around with this at all, or encountered this this art form?
Haven't necessarily played round a bit, but there've been many times as a younger student where we'll all be round wasted, and the stereo will be on, and the TV will be on at the same time, and the music and what's happening on the TV seem to be almost perfectly in sync, and there'll be a couple of us sitting around there buzzing out around it, just going whoa.
Yeah,
that's as far as it went.
That's the nature of sync, is that it always, you put images and music together and it always happens. And, you know, it's funny because that's the way supposedly John Lennon wrote, that John Lennon would write music while having the TV on all the time. And so a lot of, he'd say that like the song Good Morning from Sgt. Pepper's was supposedly inspired by a TV commercial for some cereal. So they were using synchronicity in their writing, which is again one of the reasons that I think something about that time, like sort of, well, Lifehouse comes out of the late 60s, White Album does too. Maybe that's just my own obsessions, because David Plate has done some really interesting work with Marilyn Manson and with Lady Gaga and different films, and people can check out his site as well, if you listen to the latest episode of Synchronize, he does a nice piece on Lifehouse Matrix, and we include all of his links there. And I included the links to Synchronize in the stuff I sent you, Vinny, so you can make that available to the people. But yeah, it's fun. It is stoner work. It is very fun stoner work. But what's fun about it is that there is a community of people out there who really do kind of appreciate and obsess about it. And it's a wonderful little cul-de-sac in the world of, I don't know, cinematic geekery.
Well, I've also got this feeling that somehow music makes things better in films. Like, you can look at one scene, let's say it's in the Matrix. You know that foyer scene where they have that big shootout and stuff like that, and there's the really cool dance music, Spy Break by Propeller Heads. And you just try and think about it. What would that scene be like if it didn't have that music? You know, and it would just be a bunch of guys flying around, shooting each other and stuff like that. And it's just like, yeah, well, that's a pretty good action scene. You put the music into it, though, and you see how it all goes in time. And it really it's actually becomes an iconic scene, something that blows your entire mind. And I think that this is what cinema has been. I don't know. Maybe missing to a large degree is syncing the music with the action sequences or even emotional scenes and things like that. Some musicians are really really good at it. I think what's his name? There's a composer, Thomas Newman. Who did the sound for American Beauty, Finding Nemo, The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, and things like that. Whenever I see a film that has a Thomas Newman soundtrack, I know that it's going to be good. Even if the movie itself is relatively average, I know that the music will enhance whatever's there.
Right. Yeah. I feel I'm a big fan of John Bryan's work. As a film composer, but I mean that's the whole thing. I mean, great, you know, it is a particular skill. There's the skill of the composer who can sync with film, and then there's the skill of, say, the directors or the music supervisors who are able to find those awesome tracks that, you know, I mean that's the way that Kubrick did a lot of, you know, use a lot of his or did a lot of his early sort of audacious stuff with sound and film. Or, you know, a film like The Graduate that is, you know, that the music is so, you know, that was sort of groundbreaking in terms of sort of, blowing up Simon and Garfunkel as a super group that was sort of like an interesting little pop phenomenon before. And it was the power of film. It's what I was talking about before. I mean, there is a tremendous... I mean, there ought to be. The film is like probably the most comprehensive and the most expensive medium that has been, at least up till now. And still, it's expensive to close down a street and do a car chase, you know, even if nothing explodes. That just doing that, just driving a car down a street and filming it is an expensive proposition, even if you're using a cheap camera. For all the people that you need. And if you want to put a movie star in that car, well then it's exponentially bigger. So it's an expensive medium, and it's as power, you know, for all the energy that goes into it, all of the talents, all of the energies that go into creating film, it's an incredibly powerful medium. And then, like you say, when you add music to it, which has always probably since before we were walking upright was to some degree of, you know, a really powerful thing to us.
Well, you know, imagine back in the day before capturing dialogue was even possible, when they were doing silent films where they actually had a dude with a piano in the theater playing the music to the film in order to get it to sync with people, you know?
Yep. Those were the early days of sync ups.
Way back in the day, man.
I don't know about you.
I don't know about you, but I just love the phrase "back in the day."
Back in the day, why is that?
Because I think it's just so cool.
Yeah,
you know, like back in the day, we didn't have to do this. Back in the day, we had to work. I remember my grandparents telling me stories. You know, back in the day, we had to ride 40 miles on a bicycle to get to school every morning. And yeah, you
know. No, I definitely was talking with a friend. Like, back, I do remember I was talking with her. It's like feeling like I'm just about like the last age that didn't have computers. Like the computers were just coming into school when I was like a senior in high school. And so, but I come from a family where my grandfather worked at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology at MIT. My mom was in the computer engineering department there. So I always sort of had an awareness of computers as this weird thing that my weird relatives tinkered on. And didn't even seem that cool, honestly. And then, but to be right on the edge of that explosion, which is allowing this kind of a show.
Yeah. Right, and speaking of which, the computers have the advertisements programmed in, and you're about to experience these, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the
more Lifehouse Matrix
at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free, and I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free, man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back. Oh yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from New Zealand 5 days a week. There are 9 AM FM affiliates in New Zealand that currently pick up the show. Ifinity FM Network, Rush FM Network, and Dagsy FM up in Whangarei. So you can listen to this on the radio dials in certain parts of the country. You know what really ticks me off, though, ladies and gentlemen? There still has not been a single radio broadcaster in Auckland, low power FM or otherwise, who has the guts to play this show. Don't you find that really annoying? You know, this is where I am, this is where I'm broadcasting from, and the only people who really got the guts to do it are people who ain't anywhere near me.
A prophet is never appreciated in his hometown.
Yeah, it's about right, isn't it? You know, but
tell it to James Joyce.
I do love this city, but the fact of the matter is, there's awful lots of people here, right? It's the biggest city in the country, bro. And yet I don't see a whole lot of choice out there in terms of things to listen to or things to do along this vein of thing. I mean, I just wanted to give a quick plug as well to another Aucklander who's a good friend of mine, Jonathan Eisen, and his wife, Catherine Smith, who do these magazines, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine and Uncensored. The new issues are out now, so you can get those in selected stockists as well as order copies at uncensored.co.nz and naturalmedicine.net.nz. And there's incredible articles and collations on there. The most recent one is talking about all of the inside jobs, okay? You know, from 9/11, Oklahoma City, the alleged Batman shooting and Sandy Hook and all of these other things, and putting them all together and showing the evidence. Now, moving on from that, this feeling I get about, you know, the world is just like, it's a terrible place. You know, it's really unfair, it's really nasty. But at the same time, I try to avoid all of those nasty people. And it's something Thomas Sheridan told me about psychopaths, is that if you find out that somebody's a psychopath or a lying, cheating piece of trash, don't go out after the psycho, because you can't out-psychopath a psychopath, can you? You know, if you're going to try and bring him to justice or anything like that, all you're going to wind up doing is having your life destroyed by this piece of trash. So what you do then is make a priority list. Okay, what's my priority? Cool people, nice people, decent people. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're surrounded by the cool, nice and decent people who you can actually learn something off, who would actually help you when you're down rather than kick you while you're down. Anybody else got a problem with that? I don't. You know, I don't have time for douchebags, really.
I know, but you know what? This is one of those things where if you've unless you came into this world with really good boundaries, this is the thing I've been thinking about, is because I've been going through, I've gone through this process in the last, since I wrote my book in the year or two leading up to writing my book, of really doing that, of drawing these lines and saying, this, you know, this is what I want in my life and this is what I won't tolerate in my life. And I realized that up until that point, I had set really weird, not very good for myself boundaries, and having to retrain friends and loved ones and neighbors and, you know, the world to honor, and yourself to honor and only accept certain boundaries is a, you know, I guess the longer you take to do it, the longer a process it is. And I've been actually just starting to feel the benefits of some of the people, because ultimately I think everyone actually appreciates good boundaries. I like to know, like, if there's someone whose boundaries are here, I like to know it, you know, because, you know, if you and me were, you know, if there was some place in this show where you were like, you're talking too much, dude, or whatever, you know, that's a good boundary. Or you're talking too loud. That's a good boundary, because otherwise I end up sounding too loud and talking too much, and then being, you know, thinking I'm thinking that I'm the perpetrator of scumbaggery after the fact. You know, and I think I say good fences make good neighbors. I'm not sure I entirely agree with that, but I do agree that, you know, knowing what, you know, what you'll put up with and what you won't put up with is key.
Somebody asked me what a good friend is, and I said a good friend is somebody who, when you're really feeling down, they'll bring you back up, and when you're getting too far ahead of yourself, they bring you right down again.
You know, for me, a friend is someone who stands by you when everyone else isn't, you know, or when it feels, you know, someone who knows how to get inside when you're, you know, when it feels like they're, you know, the world's turning on you, you know. So, and those people are precious, and then
learning how
to still love and forgive the people who didn't, while also recognizing that you can only count on them so far, is one of those keys to graceful living, right?
Yeah.
That is not an easy one to learn for, you know, the prideful among us, but. but necessary. You're totally necessary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's about quality over quantity, you know. I mean, just like, I remember back in high school, I'm not sure if you had a similar experience to me, but I was hanging out with lots and lots of different people all the time, and these people weren't my friends, though. They were just acquaintances. And I'm not friends to this day with a single fracking one of them. Basically, here's your choice. You're either alone, totally by yourself, or you're hanging out with people who aren't really your friends. You know, I'd rather just hang out with people who aren't really my friends rather than be totally alone and miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other option is, once you get out of high school, because frack, mate, I mean, if there is a complete example which everybody can get on board with of trauma-based mind control, public schooling.
Oh, yeah.
Once you get out of there, then you start to realize, oh my God, I'm an adult and I can actually choose who I hang with and what I do. And suddenly, all of these other people that don't really value you, and you realize, oh my God, I don't really value them either. You start to think about this a little bit better and try to look for those who are quality. I mean, when I pick out mates, bro, I try to look for somebody who's better than me at something. All my mates are better than me at something. And that's why they're my mates. If they were worse at me than at everything, they wouldn't be my friend. Because I'd have nothing
to do with it. Is there anyone in the world who's worse at you than everything?
I don't know. I mean, there are so many things
that I'm bad at that I don't even care about. You know, like, you could be really great at, like, you know, some horrific stuff that I don't even want to know about, you know, or I have a friend who's a doctor. He's also a musician. He's one of the most interesting guys I know. But when he starts talking about the thing that he has the most intelligence about, because it's so off the charts for me, I'm kind of when he's talking about ratios in terms of anesthesia, that is out of his expertise. I'm like, I can tell that it's brilliant, but that's all he talked about. If you weren't a musician and an otherwise cool guy, there would be no foundation for friendship, even though he's way better at anesthetizing somebody than I am. I don't know. There are some people who've seen some of my live shows that might disagree, but, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and another thing, I never keep any of my thoughts or my recollections or my observations set in stone, you know? Like, I'll say, oh, my friends had to be better than me or something, but, you know, it's just not necessarily true. And I can adjust and change that as time goes on. And that's another thing that I really don't like about particular people is when not only will they never admit that they're wrong, but they're not even prepared to entertain any possibility that they might be wrong about something. That just drives me nuts. You know, it's like, you know everything already. Oh, goodness. How old are you? Oh, I'm 32. Man, you're 32 years and you learned everything in the entire freaking universe and you could never be wrong about anything else. How brilliant.
Yeah. Although, I have to say, my tolerance for that, since I became a bartender, my tolerance for that has necessarily had to rise. Everyone on the other side of the bar thinks they know everything. And that's when you're dealing
with drunk people, your tolerance for everything has to rise. I mean, yep. Your tolerance to being punched in the face for no reason has to rise.
Luckily, I haven't, that's actually a chapter from my book. I got punched by a very tall model, a woman, very tall, and she clocked me really hard. And in a way that told me that she was not averse to a world in which people got punched in the face, which was really, I don't know.
I once pulled security at Subway, bro, and I got beaten up by two girls and their boyfriends at the same time.
That sucks. Ganging up on anyone. I just think the whole gang up factor, it's one of the, sort of themes that runs through What Happened to Me at Chaos, and it's, and a lot of the work that I, just a lot of, and I just like the whole bullying, ganging up thing. It's the thing that makes me the angriest. Like when I see it played out in movies or something like that, it's the thing that gets me the angriest.
It makes me look at human beings like pack animals, like they're all ripping up on you, rip shreds out of you like a pack of wolves trying to satisfy their hungry bellies. It's disgusting.
Hey, you know what? I want to do something. So I started, I'm trying to change the subject a little bit here. I started the Lifehouse Matrix when we started this episode. So we're about an hour and 32 minutes into it. And you were talking about the music that plays during that scene. And I want to show you how the Lifehouse Matrix plays out with that. So it's totally different. Now, this is the Who's music underneath this. And people who are watching this can see this.
Are you able to turn the sound up on it? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to turn the sound up right now. So we're going to come up on that scene in a second. And so in this we have the agent asking who he is, interrogating him.
Well, he's explaining how the Matrix is supposed to originally be the perfect human world and how it really works and that kind of thing, eh? And they're trying to rescue him.
It's great that this film is so iconic that without the sound at all, you were just while looking at that one scene, you knew exactly what's going on. It's one of the
I've seen it a number of times. Yeah. Well, see, the bit with the fight scene is a while away from this, man. This is just like a couple of minutes so far. And also, just bear in mind, we've got the listening radio audience here who can't see what we're seeing just yet. I mean, this will be on the YouTube channel afterwards. And it's the scene where basically Neo remembers what the Oracle told him about that he would have to make a choice about whether or not Morpheus lives or dies. And I think what's interesting is that you think about this. just from like a protester or activist type of thing, is that people actually really do have a choice about whether or not other people live or die in a lot of cases. You know, what are you willing to fight for? What are you willing, more importantly, to sacrifice yourself for? Is it somebody who you believe in, or is it something that you believe in? What is it about being, I don't know, about sacrifice, essentially, that makes you a better person, knowing that there is something better than yourself out there, that you're quite willing to just say, hey, look, you know, my life is insignificant by comparison, and I'm willing to lay it on the line to save somebody's life or to prevent something really bad from happening. And it occurs to me, there was this... The logic dictates, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And it's a collectivist mentality, isn't it? If you are the one deciding to sacrifice somebody else for the needs of the many, that's collectivism. But if you decide that you're going to give up yourself in order for the needs of the many, I think that there's nothing particularly wrong with that, right? But it just depends, because so many people don't really care, I don't think, like, enough about others or about a particular topic in order to sacrifice their time getting into it. Now, unfortunately, we're coming to break now, Andras, and we'll be right back.
Okay, well, I'm just going to keep running it real time here. And I love listening to you talk about it. Well, people who can watch it on the video, that's great. I hope you were able to hear the music. That was a really great sync take on what Lifehouse Matrix is about. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, just pop that back on there, and we'll keep recording the video side of it, and we'll pop that up on the YouTube for people, and we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You listen to American Freedom Radio. And gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you want to just continue with that that video there, because we've just come up to the fight scene in the lobby that we were talking about. I'm not sure exactly how this will work out for the audience, though.
We're watching this project called the Lifehouse Matrix, which is a merging of the music from The Who's Lifehouse with the film The Matrix. And earlier in the show, Vinnie was talking about how the scene where Neo and Trinity burst into the building where they're holding Morpheus, and they do that big gunfight where they're climbing the walls and everything, how important the music was to that. Well, the whole thing about syncing up music, new music with films and of syncups, is of connecting music and film in a way that recontextualizes the whole thing. So we're just reaching the point, coming out of The Who's Joined Together into Won't Get Fooled Again, which is the beginning of that scene. So let's just go to it right now. And this is on
can't
the video.
Can't hear it, man.
It's...
Oh, wow, that's awesome sync.
Until I met to the Jews, I was a Jew.
Vinny, do you want to describe what you're seeing so the audience can hear?
Well, if I describe what I'm seeing, it talks over the music. So, basically, ladies and gentlemen, this is the very scene when they're running through the lobby building, and a whole bunch of bullets are flying, and they're running up the walls, and there's pieces of frickin' dust and particles and stuff going everywhere. They're loading weapons, cocking them, shooting them, so on and so forth. Really, it's all over the place. What I find very interesting is that it seems like when they fire a bullet, that's when a guitar strum will happen, or when they move up the wall, that's when a few drum beats will happen, and so on and so forth. It's really sunk up quite significantly. I'm really impressed with that.
What I think is interesting, they're saying they won't get fooled again, and this is the point when they're saying, when it's the beginning of Neo not being fooled.
Not thinking that the agents can get him, you know.
Right.
So if we switch off that now and go back to this, we've only got about maybe 5-6 minutes left in the interview, roughly.
Well, I encourage people, if you go to the Lifehouse Matrix and look up Lifehouse Matrix Won't Get Fooled Again, you can go to that scene. I really encourage people to go to Lifehouse Matrix and start at the beginning. The beginning is Bob O'Reilly, and the opening of that movie with the song Bob O'Reilly is so, it's so good. This is how it sounds weird, but it's so good that you can't help but think of 9/11. This is the weird thing about synchronicity and conspiracy, and maybe this is a good place to end it. One of the things that I know about Radio 8 Ball is that when it works out perfectly, everyone thinks you faked it. Like, so if you asked a question on Radio 8 Ball and you said, you know, the most random, obscure question, like, is my girlfriend Emily going to bring me the cake that I love? And then you got a song called Emily's Cake by Emily's Cake. Everyone would think that it's so perfect that everyone would think that I faked it. But I know that those moments occur all the time. I also know from what we were talking about earlier that people, even at the smallest level, can be guilty of incredible scumbaggery and conspiracies to protect even the tiniest little bit of power, and that conspiracy is the nature of most human organization. So it's one of those weird things where synchronicity and conspiracy align, that when a synchronicity is so good, it looks like a conspiracy. And that's the thing about these sync-ups with these movies. And it's like, that's why I say the beginning of The Matrix, Bob O'Reilly with The Matrix, I watch it and I feel like I'm watching the images from 9/11, where either this is the most magical alignment of fuck-uppery ever, or it's clearly,
FCC regulations, man, and we can't beep those out. So sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for that, and I apologize to the fillets as well. Anyway, continue. We're running out of time.
Sorry about that. It's been a long time since I've been on terrestrial radio.
He's been on extraterrestrial radio all these years. But yeah.
So all I'm saying is that in a world where, like, so that when I watch this, when I see things like crazy syncs between media like this, it makes me think of the images of these things that look like they have to be conspiracies, but I have to, being an open-minded person, keep in mind the possibility, knowing how synchronicity works, that any one of these things that are like the events could be an alignment of magical proportions. The screwing of people out of their work by different organizations in meticulous ways, that's a different thing. That's a different kind of conspiracy. And those are the ones that are really the most dangerous. I mean, more dangerous than the events that are designed to enslave our minds. Well, I guess more dangerous in some ways and less dangerous in others. You got to watch this, man. Neo's about to save Morpheus.
So this is the bit where he's in the chopper shooting with the minigun.
Yeah.
Like, anybody remembers this iconic scene? You see the shreds of water as each bullet hits the water, and it comes up sort of like in a wave. And as the music goes, all of these bullets just kind of shoot with the waves and get the water up like that. That's really cool.
And Morpheus is about to wake up and pull off his chains.
Here we are, stretching the chains. Screaming, roaring, and pulls the chains off. Making a run for it as the agent hits the room. And they're jumping, and he catches them in midair. And we're pulling the helicopter away from the building.
And Trinity flies them away.
And they get shot down. All right.
And then it goes into the song is over.
Yeah.
And so the movie continues, and the music continues. Which makes it very interesting to me that The Who chose not to have that be the last song in Lifehouse, because it makes it sync even better with the movie.
Yeah. Well, and see, there's no way that they could have possibly known how well their music, like, made so many years ago would sync up with The Matrix, could they?
Right.
And this is like the essence of synchronicity, like something that it couldn't possibly be planned, couldn't possibly have any connection to it. And I doubt, right. and the filmmakers, I guarantee you, never even thought about The Who as part of the soundtrack and so on and so forth. And yet, there it is, just fits like Legos.
Right. It's one of those beautiful things. It's like, what I think of it is it's the way that nature expresses itself in our consciousness, is that the natural consciousness is purely synchronistic and sees those patterns and feels that sense of connection everywhere. And we aren't natural. And yet the most unnatural things, the making of movies and of like this electronic music and all this stuff that ends up being an expression of human ego chasing after power. But when you get far enough away from it and recontextualize it, it's still an expression that would look as beautiful and perfect as any Tibetan mandala or a flower blooming. And that's, you know, it's one of those, it's the crazy thing about the search for truth, because it's incredibly complex and full of darkness and horror, and also, from another context, it's as beautiful as, you know, looking down on the planet Earth from the moon, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Andras Jones. And from Radio8Ball.com, it's been a pleasure and it's been a lot of fun. Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, Vinny. Thanks a lot for having me on the show. And before I go, I just really do want to encourage people, please do support my Indiegogo campaign. There's only 2 weeks left in it. I know you got to go. Radio8Ball.com. Please come and support it. Synchronicity is great and I'm keeping it alive in every way I can.
All right. Andras Jones, ladies and gentlemen, Radio8Ball.com.